This is the Indie Game Development Podcast. How about you introduce yourself?
Hi there. My name is Andy Schatz. I started and I run Pocket Watch Games, the makers of Wildlife Tycoon Venture Africa.
Okay, cool. And how did you get into games? What inspired you to actually, take the leap and make your own game?
Well, I've actually been making games pretty much all my life. When I was, I probably started when I was 5 or 6 on my Commodore 64.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, way back in the day.
Okay.
And then I moved up from there. Eventually, we got into, my family got a PC, and I was programming games. And it's funny, I think there's a lot of people within the independent game community that never finish a game, and it's usually because they're far too ambitious. Back in the day when games were really small, the first two games I ever started working on, I actually finished them. And that was probably back when I was 11 or 12.
Congratulations.
I didn't have another finished game until I was 19 or 20, because everything that I was trying to do during that period of time was actually far too complicated for what I was capable of. Games got more ambitious, and so I got more ambitious, and I ended up not finishing any of those games until I got into the commercial gaming world, where I worked at Presto Studios on a few titles.
Okay. Let's go back to when you were young. And
sure.
You were talking about how you finished your first two games. Was there any kind of intrinsic understanding that you wanted to finish a game, or there was such a thing as actually not finishing a game versus finishing a game? Because, it's really phenomenal that you finished a game at such an early age.
Well, I just wanted to make a game that I could play with my friends and family. I did not release it for sale. But the first two games, the first was just a little action game, a little two-player action game where two people could run around using the keyboard, avoiding skeletons and fighting them off, a little bit like a gauntlet, a simplified gauntlet type game.
Cool.
The second game was a Warlords clone, a sort of grander turn-based strategy game in which you're building armies in a fantasy setting. And they're both games that that my friends and family play a lot. In fact, that the Warlords clone that I built is called Servants of Darkness. We actually recorded some voiceovers for it, and it's become, some of those voiceovers have become kind of classic within my little circle of friends and family, and we still quote those to this day.
Cool. So. That sounds awesome. Now, you were talking about how you wanted to develop it for your friends and family. Then did you have your friends come over and user test it, or how did that work out? And was there a lot of support then for the whole project, or?
It was really just me doing both the art and the programming, and because they're simple game designs, there was it was really easy to change something or tweak something if I wanted to. I don't remember having to do a lot of play testing or anything like that. The play testing we did was actually playing the games.
Okay.
And thinking back on that, with actually the size and the scope of the strategy game, Servants of Darkness, it's actually pretty amazing that was true. I built that one in Delphi, which is pretty, it's Turbo Pascal or just Pascal, I guess. And that was the very early days of Delphi, but that's a really clean, simple thing to program in. So.
Okay. Well, did any of your friends say, hey, I want to help you make games, or was it still kind of a independent endeavor?
They did. I had friends that helped out a little bit. After I made that strategy game, my dad and I tried to make a game together, and I don't think I've ever fought with my dad so much in my entire life when we were trying to make a game together. It was a cool game too. It was another strategy game, but it was underground, and imagine a dungeon keeper type of game where you're digging areas out underground, but then there's whole rock slides and you can use dynamite and all sorts of things. So it was almost like a strategy game that was sort of built around the idea of ant farms at war. But we just got too ambitious, and yeah, it was not a good thing for my relationship with my father. So we moved on from that one.
Okay, cool. So before you started in a commercial studio, you never really collaborated with anyone else in a game? I mean, it was still pretty much an independent thing.
No, I did. When I was in college, let's see. It, so Yeah, when I was before college, I actually went to go work for one of the very early online gaming portals, just writing some technology for them, particularly for advertisements,
Cool.
animation technology, and animation studio type stuff. Kind of in the early days of Flash, that sort of thing. And then I went off to college, and I actually had a collaborator in college, and that's where the original idea for Wildlife Tycoon came from.
Oh,
We
really? Okay.
we'd originally made a game called Dino Drop that was the idea was that you have this world and you can drop the eggs of the dinosaurs into the world and you're competing against someone else, but then once the eggs hatch, the dinosaurs become autonomous.
Okay.
So it was a strategy game about kind of breeding the types of dinosaurs that would have the correct behaviors in order to take over the world. And I wanted to bring that back to a little bit more of a real-world setting, so that's why I came back to African animals.
Okay. Yeah, the reason I ask about the collaboration is because most independent game developers don't really collaborate, and it sounds like and the people who do collaborate do notice a huge difference, you know, in terms of how long it takes and the quality and stuff like that. And I was just wondering if that's something you stumbled upon early in terms of realization, or if it's something that you came upon, you know, after you actually started working in the industry.
Well, I would say that my collaboration started once the game designs started to get more ambitious. So if when you're talking about my very early stuff, the graphics were on par with, say, Ultima 3 or Ultima 4, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And then once I started to need a higher volume of art, I did start collaborating with people, and I've basically been collaborating ever since.
Okay.
Just the volume of art you need to make a game that can compete with other games these days is generally too high for one person. I'm impressed with what some people are actually doing. There's some really amazing stuff going on about, with people that just do all the work themselves. So,
Okay, cool. Now, since you started at such an early age, I mean, did you always see yourself then as working in games, or did you consider it a hobby, or is it just something you did in your spare time, or I mean,
No,
what?
I spent a lot of time making games. I don't think I considered it a career until I started considering the idea of a career, which wasn't
Oh,
until
okay.
late high school. It was just something that I did, and I loved doing it. And once I actually started thinking about how I might want to work, I guess I've always had a dream of having my own video game company, and now I've made it come true. But I guess it was a natural progression for me. It's not like I woke up one day and said, "Oh, damn, I should be making video games for a living."
Well, did you have any role models in the game industry as you were developing these games? Or, I mean, were even any of the famous, were any of the people that you know of now, I mean, were they even visible back then, or?
Well, Will Wright, of course. I
Okay,
mean,
cool.
if you look at the work that I'm doing, it's all it kind of, probably could have come straight from him, only it would have been better if he did it. But he's definitely a huge inspiration from a gameplay perspective. There's a lot of work going on these days. I'm not a big technologist. I don't I'm not a big fan of building technology. Generally, I just want to make games. So I'm
Okay.
a huge fan of the whole middleware movement. That's one of the reasons I'm such a good fit for working with the Torque game engine from Garage Games. But I really do want to focus on gameplay because I think that there's a huge untapped market. Well, not untapped. There's a huge market, I would say, of people that care much more about the gameplay than about the
Yeah.
look. And you can't really separate the two because everyone compares or everyone cares about if a game looks good. Everyone
Yeah,
wants their game to
exactly.
look good. But there's an analog scale here of what people really do care about. And generally, with the games that we've been seeing coming out on the big consoles over the last 10 years, it's really just been a progression of art and technology, and not gameplay. So it's cool to have found a market in this independent or casual or downloadable scene, whatever you want to call it, where that really is the primary selling point.
Okay. So you're in college and you're doing the precursor to Wildlife Tycoon with your friend. And so was he helping you program it, or was it an art You know, you were the programmer, he's the artist.
He was a computer science major. In fact, he was a brilliant mathematician. He's actually got theorems named after him now. He's actually literally brilliant. But he did stick to the art. He did just do the art.
Really? Wow. Okay.
And I was doing all the programming myself. He's much smarter in every way than I'll ever be.
Did you ever Did you ever try to collaborate with anyone in programming, or was it usually just an art, you know, versus programming collaboration?
Well, in school projects, certainly, that was something that I did. And then once I started working in the commercial video game world, I interned at Presto Studios, and I was a level designer on a crappy Star Trek game, Star Trek Hidden Evil, if you've ever played it. Then I eventually went back. I went and did internet marketing stuff during the .com boom because I was dreaming of riches. But then after I did that, I went back to Presto Studios as an artificial intelligence programmer, and I worked with the guys that I consider my mentors in game development, Max Elliott and Michael Saladino. Both of those guys are just incredibly talented guys. Michael these days runs central technology at EALA, and Max is some muckety muck at Sony San Diego. These guys are I was really lucky to have found a spot underneath these two guys. We worked on a game called Whacked at Presto Studios, which was actually the first Xbox Live game. I actually have probably my biggest claim to fame after Wildlife Tycoon is that I wrote the first Xbox Live code to have actually shipped to the marketplace. The user interface for that game was mine. I didn't really collaborate in programming until then, and I actually haven't done a ton of collaboration. I did all of the gameplay programming on Wildlife Tycoon, but then I found that my back was against the wall with getting a Mac build ready, so I actually farmed the Mac build out to a guy in Paris. A huge amount of collaboration there, but there was a little bit. So
you're working in Presto Studios, and So what inspired you then to say, okay, I'm going to do Wildlife Tycoon?
Well, I wasn't at Presto Studios. Presto Studios actually went out of business in 2002, I think it was. And then I went up to work for a company called TKO Software up in Santa Cruz, and that place was a train wreck. But it's really cool, actually. I went there thinking, well, you know, I'll be the 13th person there. I'll really have an opportunity to shape this company. And we grew to like 150 people over the next 2 years.
Wow.
But the place was a mess. It was a complete mess. And I don't want to get too much into what caused the company to really fall apart at the end, but there was some really shady stuff going on. You can probably find out about it if you search for it on the internet. So the company fell apart. I left just before it fell apart. I had intended actually to go back to business school at this point. So I'd applied because I actually got so burnt out on the industry. I didn't really know about the whole independent gaming scheme so much. So I was sitting
So up until that point, you still considered the console as success?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But I was getting so burnt out on my career and feeling like I was getting further and further pigeonholed into the idea of being a user interface engineer, which is absolutely the most horrid job in the world if you're a coal miner. So I decided, well, the only way I'm going to really be able to break out of this pigeonhole is to really take a sidestep in my career. And so I applied to a bunch of business schools. And being the somewhat egotistical guy that I am, I decided I was going to apply to Harvard, Stanford, MIT, and Berkeley. And I had about 9 months between when I finished my applications and had quit my job and when school would have started. So I started making Wildlife Tycoon, and I figured I have 9 months to make a game.
Cool.
So about 3 months into this period, I started getting rejection notices from all these schools. I'd obviously set my sights way too high. By the time I'd gotten my last rejection notice, The game actually was starting to get some decent press, and
Oh,
I,
awesome.
at that point, c'est la vie, I've already got my company. I don't need this tool. It's kind of like Holden Caulfield at that moment saying, sleep tight, you morons. But yeah, so really, pretty it's pretty cool thing that this game actually worked out as it did, and the timing of it. So
Okay. I find it interesting. So you're getting press coverage before the game was even released. How did you
no, isn't that
orchestrate?
weird?
Yeah, how did you orchestrate that? What, I mean, were you sending press releases when you first started the game? I'm interested because actually the last interview was with Joe Lieberman of VG Smart.
All right.
And so he was just talking about techniques to actually gain visibility for a game. So
Right. Well, it's so funny. So many people ask me this question, and I must be the luckiest guy in the world, or there must be some sort of fairy dust floating around down here in San Diego, because all I did was write occasional blog posts on garage games and act like I knew what I was talking about. And what ended up happening is Russ Carroll from GameTunnel had noticed, and there was an article that GameTunnel put out called the Mid-Year Roundup or the Mid-Year Review, where they went and kind of did a review over the games that had come out so far and the games that they were looking forward to most in the second half of the year. And he chose Wildlife Tycoon as the one he was looking forward to most in the second half of the year,
oh, cool.
in the simulation category. And probably I got lucky because there's almost no sims aside from Democracy and Fish Tycoon, both
Okay.
great games. But yeah, so he put that out, and that article got Slashdotted. And from there, the ball just started rolling. I had publishers calling me off the hook. I had
That's awesome, man.
distributors calling me, and it was like I never contacted a single publisher on my own. They all contacted me.
And everyone else is complaining about the opposite problem.
I know.
That's
Well, it's funny. I do have to take some credit for making a game that is clearly something that there's a huge market for, a tycoon game.
Yeah.
Making an animal-based tycoon game, which there's even a bigger market for, and
Exactly.
choosing also choosing a game market that wasn't. People say that oh, there's so many tycoon games out there, but you know what? There's really not that many tycoon games out there. There's not
Yeah.
that many simulation games out there, and particularly within the downloadable space, there's not that many.
Okay.
There's really very few. So, and that was something that was a conscious decision on my part. I said, well, it was a combination of A, what do I want to make, and
Yeah.
B, what can I sell? And so when I did, I was really lucky that I did make that decision instead of the other idea that I was considering, which was a demolition derby game, which probably would have gone nowhere. But yeah,
Okay.
I'm really happy with what I chose, especially because I feel like I have so much space, so much room to expand from here, and I've learned a lot
Yeah.
about making a simulation game. So pretty
Okay.
cool stuff.
Well, let's talk about the design process then for a Wildlife Tycoon. So when you first started out, you're like, what can I make and what will be profitable? How did you research that? I mean, how long did it take for you to finally decide upon this idea?
Well, I went out and I tried to collect as much evidence as I could about what would sell well and what wouldn't. And that's really just from going out and looking at the top sellers on different lists.
Okay.
And what I noticed is that tycoon games, when they did come out from in the downloadable space, did very well, but there was almost not there was very few of them.
Okay,
So like Lemonade Tycoon 2 was
yeah,
did very,
that
very well.
still seems to be like in the top.
Yeah, I
It's
know.
it's a it blows my mind, but
Absolutely. Let's see, what others were there? Well, I also figured that the casual audience that was buying puzzle games like Bejeweled, there was probably a large crossover with the retail tycoon games.
yeah.
I think that like Roller Coaster Tycoon and Zoo Tycoon tend to sell to women, to older people, and to families that are buying it for their kids as well.
Oh,
And it seemed
really?
like
Okay.
there is a big crossover into the downloadable space with tycoon games from the retail space.
Okay.
So yeah, that was the research I did, and then what I needed to do from there was figure out a way to actually make a game. The tycoon games are notoriously content heavy. You have to build a lot of content. So I needed to come up with a way that not only that I could get it done in time, but that I could also keep the download under 20 megabytes. So that was really sort of the big design constraint that allowed for me to actually become very creative with the game design. So.
Okay. Now, what about prototyping gameplay? When you finally decided upon the idea, what was the first step you took?
I was introduced to the Torque game engine by a friend of mine, Chris Cole, that I worked with at the previous job. So I'd played around with it some. So I knew that I
Okay.
was going to be working with Torque. And so really I tried to, and Torque's also got a real-time strategy starter kit. So I just started with that, and I started building in these autonomous characters. To be honest, I got really lucky. I think the concept for Wildlife Tycoon is an extremely compelling concept. I'm totally in love with it, and that's why I'm making more games in the series. I think
Okay.
the implementation is good, maybe not stellar, but it's good. Some people really love the game. I actually really love the game, but I also see a lot of weaknesses with the actual implementation of the game itself. So, and but to be honest, the game wasn't fun at all until
Oh,
beta.
really? Okay.
Yeah, there was a lot of, I got it to a point about halfway through where I thought it was fun, but I
Okay.
think it's fun just to see little creatures that I've built the artificial intelligence run around and do their things. I think it's one of the most fun things about programming for me is programming artificial intelligence. It's like creating your own little babies, and just
Okay.
watching them go around, even watching them screw up is fun for me. So I've gotten it to a point where I enjoy watching it, but I can't imagine that anyone else would have actually enjoyed playing it at that point. I did do a lot of prototyping of different types of features, but the game didn't become fun until I really got all the features in there. So that's really why I say that I got pretty damn lucky, because I started with a game design on paper that I had no idea if it was fun until about 7 months into
Oh,
development.
really? Wow. Okay, were
Yeah.
you doing user testing all throughout this, or did you wait until beta to do user testing?
I started doing user testing around alpha, but I knew it wasn't fun. And so I didn't do any heavy user testing until beta, or just before beta, I started doing some more heavy user testing.
Okay.
I had a real problem with my beta because I released the beta well before it was ready. Generally, I find that a good rule of thumb is don't release a beta until you've gotten rid of all the known bugs. Because you know what? They're going to find them, and you already know about it, so it's a waste of their time, and it's getting in the way. It's a waste of your time because you could have spent that extra time beforehand fixing those bugs because you knew you had to fix them. You can't
Yeah.
release the game with them. So putting off a beta until you've gotten rid of all your known bugs is really the way to go, but I didn't follow that rule myself. I put out a beta with known crash bugs in it, and
Oh, okay.
I had 100 beta testers signed up through my forums to beta test the game. And it was almost immediately whittled down to like four or five that actually were able to give me any sort of valuable feedback,
Okay.
because the game was so buggy. So
So you didn't do the user testing in person. Like it wasn't where you just brought people in or went to
no, I
people's
did do that
places.
too. I did do that too,
Okay.
and actually primarily on the tutorial and the first level, I did the user testing. I figured, basically if I can communicate, I need to make sure that I'm communicating to non-gamers how to play this game, and then once they get past that point of learning how to play it, then I can be a pretty good judge myself of whether or not a game is fun and playable. But yeah, I did actually I did I probably had 10 or 15 different people where I sat behind them silent with a notepad just watching them screw up,
Okay.
and then going back and doing an iteration and finding a new person to be my monkey. So
Okay. So when you were doing this user testing, you noticed that people weren't enjoying it. I mean, what was going through your mind? Because
I
this was
don't.
at like the 7 month point, right?
Yeah, I
Okay.
think I. The thing that was going through my head at first, before I realized that I'm a jackass, is that Why aren't you guys getting this? Why don't you guys get it? Come on, it's so cool. And
Okay.
then I kind of stood back from that and I said, no, the reason that they're not getting it is that I'm not communicating to them what's cool about the game, A, and how to play the game, B. And so I really had, and one of the big things that I noticed is that people don't want to have to read a tutorial.
Yeah.
So it's the tutorial is one of the trickiest things that you can do because it's their first, not only is it their first experience with the game, but generally tutorials aren't fun. So it's like the first thing that you're having your player do is the least fun thing that they're going to do in the game. So it's like you better make sure that learning how to play the game is if it's better be fun, and if it's not fun, it better be quick. So that's really what I learned out of it. I tried to improve both of those elements.
Okay, and
Really
then
trying to
the.
communicate is cool, but making it fast too.
Okay. Now, the demographic that you were using for the in-person user testing, did it fit the demographic that you were intending to aim, or was it
Yeah, for the
just
most
friends
part.
that you knew? Okay.
No, it was. I did. Let's see. I had my mom play it, and the very first thing. It's so sad. My mother is always been extremely supportive of everything I do, but she was embarrassed to even call me back after I first had her play the game. But what it turned out is that I had this fancy 3D Quake Cam flying around type of camera mode
Yeah.
in the game, and she couldn't deal with it. And that was one of the very first things that I cut from the game. I realized, even though the true gamers out there are going to complain about not being able to turn the camera, and they did. Oh, they complained lots. This being able, having a constrained camera is something that you just have to keep the market broad,
Okay.
within space. So,
Okay, now
yeah,
were
a
you
whole bunch of people across a variety of things, but I actually had very few true gamers play the game. So.
Okay, and were you still trying to hit the 9 month deadline, or by that
Yeah,
time as you were?
I hit it in 10 months. I released the
Okay,
game. I
awesome.
started working on the game on about January 15th, 2005, and I released it on October 31st.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, it was a little less than 10 months for the game. And then it takes doing the business and sales and distribution, and then having to put together the retail version and the Mac version of the game and PR and all that nonsense has taken so long. I've only just in the last week or 2 weeks really gotten to really dig in my heels and start on the next product. So I've been thinking
Okay.
about the next product for a long time, but I've only just started working on it.
Well, that's interesting that you bring up the business aspect. When did you start on the business aspect of this project? And walk me through what you decided to do in terms of business, PR, marketing, stuff like that.
Right. Let's see. Well, my first contact with business at all was Tri-Media approached me in May to do distribution for the online version of the game. And
Okay.
I met with them at E3. Yeah, it all just kind of grew pretty organically, starting with the blog posts on Garage Games. Those blog posts on Garage Games, I wish they would actually post what kind of how many views they're getting, how many page views each post is getting, because it's gigantic. I mean, there's so many
Okay.
people that look at those blog posts. So that was the way that I started with PR and marketing, because there's just a huge number of people that pay attention to those things. And of course, no one thought that the game was cool there, and no one thought that it would ever get done, and I don't blame them.
Well,
In
yeah.
fact. In fact, actually, the community surrounding Garage Games isn't a big fan of my game, at least the vocal ones. I don't think that they don't like it. It's just that it's not really the type of game that appeals to the typical people that spend their time on Garage Games.
Okay.
But there's also a huge number of businesses and distributors that pay attention to that stuff too. So it's a good place to start. It's a great place to start. And then everything just grew organically from there because people were contacting me. So.
Oh,
I
okay.
don't have much. I suppose I could offer for advice, but the best advice I can offer to you is make a good game and get lucky.
Okay, well, the thing is, you were aiming for the downloadable market, and then I guess It turns out that you were doing something retail. How did that come about? What inspired that? Were you a little concerned about retail based on what you've heard on Indie Gamer?
Yeah, well, I didn't expect that retail would provide much in the way of sales. I don't have any solid numbers on my retail sales yet, but I did just hear yesterday that the game is being placed in Walmart in 1,750 stores in Walmart.
Awesome.
So if that is any sort of prediction of what kind of revenue I'm going to see, I'm actually going to see probably a lot better revenue from my retail sales than I am for my downloadable sales. But yeah, I didn't put a whole lot of faith in retail until just recently, really. And I haven't bothered to, I've had a ton of people approach me to do international retail stuff, and I haven't even bothered
Oh,
because
wow.
for what I've heard, it's just nothing. But yeah, I might end up having to do that stuff if retail sales end up being really strong, which is entirely possible.
Okay.
So yeah, but the retail publishers all approached me. I had probably six of them approach me, and a few of them actually got into a little bidding war over the game. I eventually signed with Mumbo Jumbo. They're pretty much the biggest out there, and they
Yeah.
have an incredible track record. They're actually the 10th biggest video game publisher in the world in terms of units sold, and
Oh, wow.
that's everything, console games, everything. And you can attribute that to the fact that they do the retail publishing for Bejeweled and Lemonade Tycoon 2, and all the really big ones. There's a couple other pretty big competitors out there, but they're far and away the kings. So.
Okay, cool. Now you used contractors in the development of this. How did that
Right.
come about? Was that a smooth process? Was it
Again,
anything
man,
surprising?
I'm just a lucky guy. I'm really lucky. I had a total of eight contractors working on various different parts of the project. They all had full-time jobs, so it was just kind of in their spare time or weekends or whatever.
Okay.
And I organize, and they're global, so I have one guy that's in Hawaii, a guy in Eugene, Oregon, a guy in San Francisco, a guy in LA, a guy in Missouri, a guy in Boston, a woman in Boston, and a guy in France.
Wow.
Yeah, I did all the communication through Instant Messenger and email. I started the guys that I started with were all people that I'd worked with, colleagues from previous jobs. So I started off with four people three people that were really interested in helping out. And then as I had other needs, it just grew organically from there. I would
Okay.
just largely just put up a post out into the Garage Games community or up on Indie Gamer, and I'd have people respond. Or I actually approached a few people directly also. So
Okay.
yeah, I got
So
lucky
do you.
because they pretty much stuck, everyone stuck with the project to the end, and they all worked for royalties also. There's
Oh,
the
really?
only ones,
Wow.
yeah, I paid the ones that I didn't know, the ones I hadn't worked with before. The first couple of tasks, I paid them with an upfront fee just so that I could protect both them and me, because I didn't want to get some jerk getting into the royalty stream if I didn't like working with them.
Okay, that's a
So
good idea.
yeah, but then once they kind of passed that period, I offered to them to get them into the royalty stream, and I didn't. I had saved up a lot of money from my kind of corporate gaming world career, so I actually had over 100K saved up, and I figured I could last about 4 years on that if I needed to.
Awesome.
But I didn't want to spend that money on contractors. I didn't want to start spending kind of like life savings on paying contractors to do work. So the royalty stream was really the way to go. For the next game, I'm probably going to be a lot more flexible about whether people would like to work for royalties or whether they'd like to work for contracting fees, just because it's
Okay.
a little bit more solid future for the company. So,
Okay, cool. And
yeah.
so tell me about your, well, is there anything else you wanted to add about the contracting side or any other surprises?
Just that they're all really talented people. I got really lucky. And I got actually there were a few kind of surprises that came out of it. Like an old college buddy emailed me out of the blue because he was running the college reunion committee, and he had done a search on my name and noticed that was making this game that had, and I'd written a little bit of poetry that was supposed to tell the story and put it on the website. And so he emailed me in poetry because he actually writes poetry all the time. And so he and I actually exchanged a few poems back and forth that were to the effect of, hey, you're working on a game that's really cool, and you know, except in poet in limerick format. And then he would email, you know, and I would email him back, like, hey, yeah, I am. How's it going? Do you want to help me out? And so that actually, we formed a business relationship by writing limericks back and forth to one another. So yeah, some surprising fun things came out of the contractors, that's for sure.
Okay, cool. And then what inspired you to submit to IGF?
Oh, well, because it's awards, and I like to think of myself as a really cool guy that wins a lot of awards.
Cool.
Come on, everyone that has a game that they think might actually succeed in the IGF ought to be submitting the IGF because it's fun and it's cool and it's a big ego boost if you get selected as a finalist. And yeah, it's really brought in a lot of respect and business opportunities for me. Too.
Okay. So, well, when you, I think the deadline for the IGF was before you actually formally released the game. So, yeah. I mean, was there a scramble or for organizing what you wanted to put in the IGF build, or how does that work?
Well, to be honest, they don't actually start looking at there's a submission deadline, and I think they probably do a quick check at the submission deadline to make sure that you're not just submitting a pile of crud. But I don't think they actually – I'm pretty sure they don't actually start doing any judging on the game until several months after that. So I actually – the version that they actually judged was I think only a week before my final release of the game. And then once I got selected as a finalist, you can actually update again after that. So I was able to actually resubmit with the retail build, which has some added features, like some added sound and some bug fixes and stuff like that. The version that was judged was actually a pretty final version. Actually, with the next game, I'll probably be struggling a little more on that, but hopefully they'll give me the benefit of the doubt since I was a finalist this year, because I'm getting such a late start on it. But I do intend to submit the next game to them.
Cool.
Okay,
so you got selected as a finalist. Can you, talk about your experience in terms of just what happened to you and the community, I mean, you know, in terms of respect or more opportunities, and then also just, GDC and what happened there.
Right. So being selected really was a huge honor. At the time of around when I was selected, I was actually writing a few articles, kind of trying to start up get a little bit of notoriety within the industry by writing articles for Game Developer Magazine and also for Gamasutra, and not just notoriety, but I was writing articles on things that I didn't know that much about. So I was actually using the opportunity to write the article to actually research something that I wanted to research. So the first one I wrote for the Game Developer Magazine, the career issue, I wrote about sort of a survey of the casual gaming industry or the independent gaming industry and how to start a company. And then the next one I wrote was about marketing. And actually, the marketing one didn't end up turning out very well. It was originally slated for the magazine, and they ended up slotting it over to Gamasutra. It did not turn out as well as I wanted, but I did learn a lot while I was doing it, and there are some good points in there. And I wrote that one actually with James C. Smith of Reflexive. Simon Carlos, who's the chairman of the IGF, is also the editor-in-chief of Game Developer Magazine, so I got to kind of talk with him and just talk with him about the IGF in general, and that was a really cool thing, and just kind of like how the IGF works and all that. He's a great guy, really, really nice guy.
Cool.
So then with at least in terms of respect within the community, it's really funny. I think that a lot of people, the game developers out there, don't like my game very much. and probably were a little surprised that it got selected as a grand prize finalist. And I don't blame them for not liking the game. I think there's a lot of reasons not to like Wildlife Tycoon, but at the same time, I think, like I said before, I think the concept is a really, really cool concept, and I, I, I pretty firmly stand by the idea that conceptually it was, I think it's the most interesting conceptual game in all of the 2006 IGF, but it again, it's just on the execution that I think maybe fell a little short.
Okay.
But yeah, so anyways, it did actually earn me, I think, or earn my company a little respect within the community. But I think there was also a bit of people scratching their heads about it, too. but I'll show them next game.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
They'll be falling all over themselves for the next one.
Okay. Yeah, so now you're talking about your next game. You know, what's in store?
So I am actually doing I have two games in the pipeline right now. The second one I can't talk about yet. But I guess I can say that I'm going to be moving over after I do this next game. I'll be moving over to more community oriented games, a la Three Rings with Puzzle Pirates and Bang Howdy. I couldn't have done that before without some funding. So this next title, though, I'm actually doing a follow up to Venture Africa, and I'm doing Venture Arctic. But the cool thing about it is not the same game as Venture Africa. It's a really unique take on the whole tycoon genre. It's rather than building up an ecosystem like what you did in Venture Africa or in Sim City, you know, you start with nothing and you build a city.
Yeah.
The levels are actually going to be pre-populated with animals, and the player will actually be playing the role of nature. And this is all set within Inuit myth or lore. And the player will actually be playing the role of nature, and the player, because they're playing the role of nature, they are rewarded for both the success or the birth and the death of animals. In the summer, the player is going to be rewarded for feeding the animals, and in the spring for breeding the animals, and in the fall for covering the land with ice and snow, and in the winter for bringing sickness and death to the animals. And so what's cool about this is that the currency of the game is actually the souls of the animals themselves. So that when an animal dies, you collect their soul, and the soul is what you can spend on doing environmental changes, like covering an area with snow, or in the summer, melting that snow to reveal the landscape. And so it's not just about building up things, and it's not just about killing things, because the more souls you get, the more currency you have to spend on altering your landscape. And so you're trying to facilitate both the birth and the death of the animals themselves, so that you can not only sort of, I guess, so you can essentially farm as many souls as you possibly can and then use them to alter the landscape. And the other cool thing is that it's both marine and terrestrial animals. And I've had a great day. This morning I got to meet with a marine biologist from UCSD Scripps and the Scripps Institute about
cool.
marine ecosystems. And then this afternoon I had a phone conversation with a Native American experts, because I'm trying to get all the Inuit stuff really authentic. All the animal models are actually going to be based upon Inuit sculpture and stuff. So it's a really unique take on the idea of a management or simulation game, and it's I'm just totally psyched about it.
Okay. And have you prototyped the gameplay yet, or I mean, what stage is it in right now?
Right now, we're just moving out of the documentation phase, and we're starting the prototype this week.
Okay.
So we're building upon the core technology for Venture Africa, so we should be able to prototype this thing pretty fast.
Cool.
I won't have to rely on luck again to make the thing.
Now, you were talking about interviewing other people, you know, as part of the research. And was that something you did for Venture Africa too?
I did a lot of research on Venture Africa, just in terms of researching animal behaviors, most through books, the library, and through the internet. But I didn't actually interview individuals. For this one, I'm going whole hog on everything. So I've done actually a lot of reading on Arctic ecosystems. There's a great book called Arctic Dreams by Barry Lopez that really just, it covers the Arctic from every perspective, from a sociological, from a biological,
awesome.
from all these different perspectives. So that's, I'm really drawing a lot of stuff from that.
Yeah, I find that in developing a game, the fun part of pre-production is just also reading up on, the domain area and just learning
Oh
about
my
all
God.
that, so.
My job is the coolest job in the world. I love it. I've always dreamed about starting a video game company where the games that we made were games that were set all over the world in real-world locations so that I would have an excuse to go visit those places and
Awesome.
go spend a month like researching my ruins or something like that, because that's absolutely, that would be the coolest job in the world. So I suppose I'm probably kind of taking a step towards doing that
Okay,
right now.
awesome. Now, when do you expect this game to be released then?
I don't want to put a solid date on it, but somewhere
Okay.
around the beginning of 2007, probably.
Okay, cool.
Maybe a little earlier, maybe a little later.
Okay, and you were talking about the second game. Is that going to be done in tandem? I mean, at the same time, or is it going to be
It's
afterwards?
right now I'm in talks with someone about the possibility of getting started on it early. But we'll see. It's too early. It's right now. It's really just a straight concept right now. There's
Okay.
not any. We've barely got any documentation on it. So it's right now. It's a pipe dream. But
Okay,
it's
cool.
really cool. It's a cool pipe dream.
Now, when you talk about, your studio, you're busy now, maintaining all these business issues, and you're also working on your next project. I mean, how much time every day do you spend on technical stuff versus business stuff now? Or
Well,
design stuff
that's,
versus.
it certainly changes depending upon the portion of the development cycle. I actually just hired my first intern, so that's cool. We actually get to start, we really started heavily working on the pre-production for Venture Arctic.
Cool.
I really spent probably 4 months hardly doing any engineering at all up till this, between the new year and a week or two ago.
Yeah.
It was almost entirely business related stuff. But then I know that now that pre-production's starting and Venture Africa is pretty much out of my hands, the actual development stuff is gonna come back into the foreground here. So I would say during the development of Venture Africa, it ranged anywhere from 30 to 90% of my time was on development, and the other stuff the other time the rest of the time was on management or business. And it'll probably there's probably going to be more management and business now, but that's why I'm bringing in the help, bringing in
Okay.
help to get the game done. So
Okay. Now, also, do you spend any time, I guess, researching new game design concepts or even looking at other games? I mean, how much
sure,
research
yeah,
now is.
I on the indiegamer.com forums I play almost every single demo that people post.
Oh, okay, cool.
So yeah, I play. I try to play basically anything that you can download, and I also try to play them for no more than 5 or 10 minutes,
Okay.
partly because of from a time perspective, but not spending all my time playing people's games, but also because I think that probably 80% of the decision making about whether or not a person's going to buy your game. I guess there's. The right way to think about it is 50% of a person's decision about whether they're going to buy your game happens in the first 10 minutes, and the other
Okay.
50% of that decision happens when their trial period runs out. So it's
Okay.
like, so those are the really the two moments, or the two periods of the two moments of time that you really have to focus on. You have to make that first 10 minutes so freaking cool that they're like, yeah, I want this game, and then when that trial period runs out, you got to put on such a hard sell that they can't, not only such a hard sell, but you got to put on a very clean sell too,
Yeah.
that they say, yeah, that sounds cool, I want the rest.
Okay. Well,
So
that's a good
yeah, that's.
question. I mean, now that you have it released, do you play around with your Venture Africa? I mean, like just tweaking things or minor changes there?
I didn't do a whole lot up until about a week ago. I just launched a pretty major patch from my own website, and I'm kind of waiting to see what happens to my conversion rate on it.
Okay.
Yeah, I actually there are a couple of features that I think really sucked in it, and so I took them out. Or I
Okay.
changed them, and I actually rearranged the entire first half of the levels, the kind of the goals and everything of the first half of the levels of the game, to be a little bit more friendly for the trial version of the game. So we'll see. I don't really have any good data on it yet, but
Okay.
hopefully that's gonna improve my conversion rate.
Cool. Now, you said that you hired your first intern. I take it that
Yeah.
was like a programming intern or
No,
business
he's an art
intern?
guy. He's an art
Oh,
guy.
okay.
I actually have a computer science fine arts degree from the college I went to.
Okay.
So I know enough about art that I can manage an artist. As an intern, he's actually really excited about the idea of starting a company someday himself.
Oh,
So
okay,
that's
cool.
really what I'm kind of offering him from an internship perspective, that he's really getting to observe and a company that is not yet in the realm of truly successful, but definitely on its way there.
Yeah.
So I think it's a really perfect experience for what he's looking for. And for me, I'm looking to build a local team right now. Just to be completely honest about it, working alone all the time gets really lonely, and it can be
Yeah.
pretty tough sometimes. And also, not really being able to truly control the schedule of a contractor because they've got a day job is also something that's pretty difficult too. So I'm trying to build up a local team right now.
Okay.
Maybe open an office. We'll see. I'm still working right now from a home office.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see. If this Walmart version of Venture Africa does well enough, I might open up that office sooner than I expected. So.
Okay. Well, you were talking about being lonely. Since where you're situated, there are a decent amount of game studios. Do you meet with
Oh
the
yeah.
console game developers in San Diego?
Well, some of the guys I know still are here, but actually, one of my old mentors, Max, the one who's at Sony, is still in town.
Okay.
Actually, the IndieGamer.com forums, we do a little San Diego meetup of indie gamer guys.
Oh, awesome.
So that's been a lot of fun. It's just four or five of us, but we'll go out and get a few beers and just chat and totally nerd out 100%. Yeah, I don't. I've intended to go to like IGDA meetings and stuff like that, but I've just never really gotten around to it. I find that, well, I don't know. I mean, I love those guys too. So I don't know. I just haven't done a lot of meeting or hanging out with console game development guys from around here.
Okay.
I do have a couple of friends. I got another guy at Sony that I hang out with. I don't have a good answer to your question.
Okay, that's fine.
I
Well,
probably should.
in your whole business experience up to this point, I mean, were there any like major realizations or major mistakes that you wish you wouldn't have made or things that you would pass on to other people who, want to follow your same path?
Sure. Well, lots of things. I think I've touched on a few of them already. One is don't release a beta until you've gotten rid of all your known bugs. Don't release a beta until you need to release your beta. I think that you should get as much user feedback as you humanly can, but I would do it in a very closed setting where you can have it be friends or family or people where you can actually observe them. But in terms of doing a
Okay.
public beta test where you are trying to get, 50 or 100 or 200 people to play your game, where you don't actually have any sort of connection to these people, don't do it until you're ready to do it. And then I strongly encourage it when you are ready to do it. But yeah, fix all your damn bugs.
Okay.
And then let's see, other snafus that I ran into. Oh well, I suspect there's a lot of people out there fudging their backup and their backup and source control
Okay.
utilities and not really paying much attention to it. I actually the reason that the game Venture Africa shipped in 10 months rather than 9 was that I actually had a hard drive die on me, and I lost a month's worth of programming work because I hadn't been being diligent about my backups.
Okay.
So yeah, that's not something to screw around with, because you don't know when it's going to happen, but when it does, you're screwed. I mean, that's your entire business. It's your life. So
Yeah.
don't screw around with it. Yeah,
Okay.
that's what I'd say.
Now, in terms of business relationships, anything surprising or is it just pretty much standard stuff? I mean,
What do you mean by
It's
that?
not, well, when I say standard stuff, I mean where you pretty much keep in contact. I mean, it's not something where you need a whole new set of skills. As long as you can converse with someone, you're pretty much fine.
Oh, yeah, well, the internet is a dangerous place, man. It's the Wild West. So never put anything down. You know, I actually, it was really funny. At GDC, a guy named James Regan came up to me, and he's a producer at Ubisoft.
Okay.
And he came up because he was interested in the studios and maybe working with some of the studios that had made some of the IGF finalists. And I looked
Okay.
at him and I was like, I know you. I had in the early days of when I was working at TKO Software, he'd actually come to see if he wanted if they wanted to work with us, and I was at the lunch with just a couple other guys kind of pitching stuff to him. And he was at Ubisoft and he just finished up Splinter Cell, and
Okay.
I said to him, oh yeah, Splinter Cell, that looks really cool, but I think I'm just gonna rent it. And the dumbest thing you can do is tell a guy his game is a renter.
Okay.
And the thing about the internet is that it's really easy to make mistakes like that, to say things to people about their work or their games. Basically, it you should, you know, from a business perspective, everything that comes out of your mouth should be positive.
Okay.
And that's hard to do on the internet. There's some people that really piss me off really bad.
Okay.
And some of them are customers. So yeah, it's your job to be nice all the time if you're trying to work in business, and it's also your job to be very clear about your goals, and be as open as possible with people without giving away all your secrets.
Okay.
So you know that I think that's the root of professionalism, and you kind of one of the things that I really admire about Michael Saladino, who's the guy who now runs Central Tech at EALA, is he really taught me about the idea of professionalism,
Okay.
and what that means. And it's all about honesty and respect and working your butt off and being an example for everyone else. So that's, you know, that's what I'd say. You know, be an example and be respectful all the time.
Okay.
Never let your guard down.
Cool. Speaking of goals, I mean, do you have any long-term goals for your studio, or going to take it one day at a time,
Sure.
or?
No, I definitely have long-term goals. Eventually, I'm going to turn into a giant purple tentacle and take over the world. No, I would I'm styling Pocket Watch games after the Discovery Channel. I
Okay.
think that the Discovery Channel is in terms of its content, they cover pretty much any real-world content. So it's not just animal games that I'm planning on doing.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got what Orange County Choppers on Discovery Channel, and you know, shows about home improvement and stuff like that. But it's all
Cool.
real world stuff. It's all stuff that human, sort of a very broad base of people have a connection to. It also is
Yeah.
pretty low budget stuff. You know, it's not like these huge high budget, you know, actors and dramas and stuff like that. So that's really what I'm styling the company around. So that's what you can expect in terms of content to come out of the company. I also think that for me, I find a lot of value in feeling like I'm doing something positive for the world. I grew up
Yeah.
playing games like Ultima 4, where you know,
Okay.
people where the game was actually teaching values to you, or games like chess, or strategy games where you. Or any sort of exploration game or mule where you're having to trade with people and have interpersonal relationships with them.
Okay.
So I really look back to those games and my childhood and think about how positively I was influenced by games. And I don't mean to sound like a snob, but you know, I do look at 99% of the games that come out today, particularly sort of console-oriented games. And I hate to say this, but most independent games too. Or, you know, many independent games, I would say, are more either along the lines of a time waster or just a straightforward action game. And believe me, I play these games too, but they aren't games that I feel are going to contribute to a child's development in their personality in a positive way.
Okay.
So it makes me feel really good that I can actually, you know, I have control over this, and it's something that I can feel like I can do something good for the world. It makes me feel like a better guy. So,
Okay, cool. Is there
yeah.
anything else you want to say to game developers before we leave?
Man, you know, I've said said a lot here, talked a lot. I guess one of the things that I would like to say, in terms of game design, I think a kind of an interesting thing, an interesting way to think about game design, is that if you start with a subject or a theme, and you allow that to define the gameplay, rather than starting with a gameplay and then letting
Okay.
that define the theme, I think is really one of the ways that we're gonna see some of the really interesting game designs come out. I think that it's very, very difficult to come up with a creative game design from a completely abstract perspective. And
Okay.
I think the reason, and so I think what's happening is that people do want to start with an abstract game design, but because of that, they start with abstract game designs that aren't that different from what is already out there.
Okay.
Because it's abstract things are really difficult to think about. You know, we, in terms of human history of abstract thought, you only in the last 2,000 years have humans really started thinking abstractly. I mean, the ancient Greek didn't even have the idea of negative numbers or zero, because math for them was entirely based upon geometry. It was based upon the real world. And
Yeah.
so, you know, it wasn't until the Arabs invented algebra or algebra or however you want to pronounce it, which is actually where the word comes from, did humans in general start thinking about abstract thought. So it's a really difficult thing, is my point. So, but if you take a step back from that and you say, hey, you know, what's cool? African ecosystems. How can I make a game about African ecosystems? And then you can construct your abstract game design using puzzle pieces from a variety of different abstract game designs, from a variety of different games
Yeah.
that you know. I think that that's really one of the best ways to come out with really fresh, original ideas about approaching game design. Yeah, you can see a lot of games that probably came, a lot of the most innovative games that we've been seeing lately probably came from that perspective. You look at like Spore that Will Wright is working on, and he started from a perspective of astrobiology. You know, how can
Yeah.
we make a game about this? So yeah, I really, I think that that's, I think it's backwards from what most people want to do, because
Yeah.
they like to think of game design as the most important thing above all else. But if you actually take a step back and think about theme first and allow that to shape your game design, I think it actually makes for more interesting stuff. So,
Okay.
yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. You know, I think the last game that I released really benefited from just picking a theme first and then going and choosing the appropriate gameplay to represent that theme. So I totally agree.
Cool.
Anything else? Any last words?
No,
Okay.
no, this has
Well,
been fun.
how about your website? Because I don't think you ever mentioned your website.
Right. Come buy my game right now. I order you.
Okay.
WildlifeTycoon.com is where you can buy the game. Or, you know, I also run Catfish with a Q, which is a site that aggregates blogs about game development and then allows people to rate them so that you don't have to go through and read everyone's crappy blog in order to find the good stuff.
Okay. So that's
So
QATFISH.com.
that's right. Yeah, and
Okay.
that's something that I'm really starting to promote, because I use it myself as a tool to read the interesting stuff that's coming out of the game development blogosphere, and I think it's a great way to keep up with what's going on with some of the brighter minds in our industry. And it covers both console and independent games, but yeah, it's all interesting stuff. So catfish.com, that's catfish with a Q, and then wildlifetycoon.com is where you can go buy Wildlife Tycoon, Venture Africa.
Sounds good. Famous last
Great.
words. Thanks
There
again,
you
Andy.
go.
Appreciate
Yeah,
it.
absolutely, anytime.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.